You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I'm not urging the government to put seatbelts on round town buses simply because it's not practical and not a major safety issue. But certainly buses on highways and rural roads where there's a chance of rolling over, very definitely, because, you know, people have been killed and injured in large quantities, and it's a no-brainer that if you're restrained in the seat, then you're not going to get mashed as you roll around the cabin during a rollover.
Buses seem to be one of the last vehicles where seatbelts are not compulsory. Why has it taken so long for this conversation to come to the forefront?
Because the government traditionally has had a very cozy relationship with the transport companies and didn't want to burden them with regulation and expense.
One of the issues with buses and public transport is they often are overcrowded and you have people standing up. So if we are to consider seatbelts, do we also need to exclude standing passengers?
No, not round town. It's not. I mean, if you look statistically, bus accidents round town don't happen all that often and people don't generally get all that hurt. The buses that count are the ones that are on rural roads. And, you know, in June there was a bus lost control in ice with a bus load of Korean tourists. There was a number of major injuries. There's been three within the last 3 weeks that have rolled over, and in every case, there's been injuries that relate to rolling around the cabin during a rollover, and it's simply not safe and not acceptable that the buses are not protecting their occupants.
In the media release, you mentioned the seatbelt policy is for vehicles which go over 50 kilometres an hour. Some of the recent accidents were in areas where the speed limit was 50 kilometres or less. Yep. What do we need to do for these cases?
Well, we need to. There's a difference between going 50k an hour on a rural road and 50k an hour on a city road. So, as I said, I'm not advocating this for around the city. I don't think it's practical and I don't think it's needed. But it is needed on rural roads because most New Zealand roads are built on mountains or coastlines. There's no rail guardrails at the side of the road in many cases. There's big ditches. There's gravel at the side of the road so that if one wheel slips onto the gravel, you quite often skid and then roll over. Rural roads are a whole different movie, even if the bus is going at a relatively low speed, because the outcome of an accident, as has been shown in the last 3 weeks, the outcome of an accident, it may start as a simple slipping accident, but it often ends up with the bus rolling over, and there's a totally unacceptable level of injuries as a result.
Within the cases of rural roads that are within this 50-kilometre speed limit, you would still want to implement seatbelts there?
Absolutely.
You also mentioned the lack of electronic stability control is something that is a concern. Do we need to implement a plan where buses for public transport have electronic stability control?
I'm not sure how effective it is to retrofit electronic stability control on older buses, but I mean it's a no-brainer that buses as of say January the 1st next year should have to have it, because it's one of the big magic bullets of road safety, because what it does is in slippery situations where the driver loses control, the bus itself takes the control back again in a way that helps prevent accidents. And they can prevent rollover accidents on buses by 50%. That's a big percentage, that's half. The best accident is the one that never happens. It's an absolute no-brainer that electronic stability control has to be fitted on future buses, if not now.
You mentioned bus operators try to get by with minimum maintenance. Do we need stricter certificate of fitness safety inspections for buses used for public transport?
Well, the certificate of fitness is basically like a warrant of fitness from hell. It already is incredibly strict. What is quite clearly not strict is the level of maintenance between the certificates of fitness, and in some cases I think there's been a very cozy relationship between the bus company and the people doing the checking, so that stuff that's not safe has sneaked through. And there's been a big drop in the level of police enforcement at the side of the road, because as you possibly know, they used to have a very vigorous roadside testing regime. I don't think they're testing as much as they used to, and I think that needs to happen where large commercial vehicles are concerned.
Lately, there's also been a lot of bus strikes revolving around wages and long shift. Given the fact that these drivers are carrying a large amount of people, do we need to look into driver wages and, perhaps more important for safety, their shifts and hours?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, you know, when you've got $500,000 bus and 30 or 60 human lives at stake, you want to make sure that you've got a well-trained, well-paid, rested employee. Because, you know, the reality is that a well-trained, rested, skillful employee is far less likely to have an accident. You know, it has been estimated that I think 55% of all road accidents are fatigue-related. But, you know, we're talking about 60 people at once here, and it's an absolutely no-brainer that if people are having to work long shifts or split shifts, that is, where they carry people in the morning and then are not employed and then carry them again in the afternoon, they're going to be tired just the same as you or I would, and a tired driver is much, much more likely to make a mistake. I think it's an absolute no-brainer that well-trained, well-rested, and well-paid employees is the absolute essence of road safety.
What are the government doing around bus safety so far?
Well, what they're doing so far is in calling an inquiry, which may or may not result in changes. You know, when a government is in opposition, they want as much trouble as possible because it gets them voted in. But then once they get in and realise the enormity of running a country, they tend to want things to go very smoothly. This government come into power has been quite positive about road safety, for which I'm very pleased. But also, I mean, they don't want to get offside with the business community, and the business community will always lobby and complain and whine when there's any expenses, you know, as if it's coming out of their pockets personally. I'm waiting to see what actual changes arise from this particular inquiry. And I hope we're not going to go back into the habit that the government of the last 10 years had of just putting everything into the too hard basket.
Is there any further comments that you'd like to make?
You know, the biggest mistake in road safety was made for 100 years, and that was they wanted people to change their driving behaviour as a way of lowering the road toll. But in fact, the road toll started lowering when they stopped trying to change behaviour and instead they changed the vehicles and the roads so that the normal human behaviour didn't end up in fatalities.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.